It's the Book of the Week.
Good morning, everybody. It's Thursday morning. It's Book Club Day again. Welcome to the Portsmouth Authors Collective Book Club. And I have the one and only Laurie Westron in the studio with me. Good morning, Laurie.
Hello there, Matt.
And we've got Andy Hanlon, who's coming to chat about his new book. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
Yeah, so do you want to tell me a little bit about Andy then, Laurie?
Yeah, so Andy is a veteran traveller and he studied politics at university, followed by a varied career in sales and education. Masala and Other Mixes, Andy's first book, recounted his travels in India, while his second book, Island Life, takes him to Guernsey and the Isle of Man in search of employment. His books are packed full of local history, culture, and political commentary, as well as his own adventures and mishaps. He says that his travels have provided no shortage of inspiration for his quirky, humorous writings. And today we'll be talking to Andy about his latest book, Sent from Coventry. So, Andy, welcome back to the studio. It's good to see you. Tell us, first of all, a little bit about your latest book.
Hi, Laurie. Good to see you again. And as always, thanks for all the great work you do with the Portsmouth Author Collective. So the latest book, for local listeners, might be wondering why it's called Sent from Coventry. So I actually grew up in Coventry. I have lived in Portsmouth now for almost 20 years, but grew up in Coventry, hence the title Sent from Coventry, which is a play on the expression sent to Coventry. For any listeners that don't know what that means, it's basically when you're ostracised and people won't talk to you. I understand, without going off track too much, it stemmed from the English Civil War, where Coventry was pro-parliamentarian, and royalist prisoners that were sent there to a prison camp, the guards wouldn't speak to them, hence sent to Coventry. Anyway, it's another travel log. This one's quite extensive. It covers a period of a few years. It starts off in France, in Saint-Malo. Then I move on to Paris, then to Amsterdam, then on to Turkey, did a fair bit of travelling in Turkey, then went to the island of Rhodes, which is a Greek island in the Mediterranean, then on to Israel, and I talk obviously about my time in Israel, quite controversial at the moment with everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I do look at the political situation and I just sort of do discuss that, not necessarily in great detail, but I do sort of cover that. So I spent almost a year in Israel. And then when I left, I went to Egypt, then back to Rhodes, then to Athens, and then on from Athens to North America to Canada, where I spent again almost a year, ultimately being deported from Canada.
Oh, well, that sounds like a story right there. So was all of this travel in connection with work or something
no,
else?
No, not at all, no. It was literally just a desire to travel. So basically, by the time I arrived in Israel, I'd literally ran out of money and I was down to, I think, $20. Had to sort of lie to the immigration saying that I had X amount of money and credit cards and all this sort of stuff. Fortunately, they didn't ask to see any of the money, otherwise they wouldn't have allowed me in. So that's kind of why I spent quite a bit of time there working on a moshav. For any listeners that don't know what a moshav is, it's similar to a kibbutz, which is a sort of farming collective, but the difference is farmers actually own their own farms and land, and they market the produce collectively to get a better price. From a worker's point of view, you could actually earn a sort of half-decent salary as opposed to sort of pocket money, which is what you would be paid mm-hmm. in a kibbutz. Mm-hmm. So I managed to save enough money to do the additional travelling to Egypt and to Greece and to get me to Canada. And again, I went into Canada intentionally knowing that I'd be looking for work, tree planting work initially. So, you know, I sort of run low on funds. So it was really a necessity to work there. Yeah.
So I've traveled quite a bit. I usually travel by a machine such as the one that's parked out in the green room at the moment. I think traveling is quite an amazing experience. So I think we're going to break now for a piece of music.
Yes, I think we shall travel over to the list of records. and pick one out.
We'll come right back in a few minutes. And we're back with Andy Hanlon talking about his latest book, Sent from Coventry. So, Andy, we were just talking about some of your travels and how you were, it sounds like, working your way around the world, like many young people do. And tell us something about that experience of working in a place rather than just traveling through it. So when I've been traveling, that's pretty much what I've been doing. I've been traveling through quite slowly and for extended periods of time, but I've not stopped in any one place long enough to actually work. So tell us a little bit about the difference there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point because obviously your perspective is very different when you're actually working in a place and you're trying to earn a living. I think it's probably an obvious thing to say. It will give you a greater insight into what that place is all about. Social, economic, and so on, various aspects of it. So, for example, when I was in Israel for a brief period, I actually worked with some Palestinians, which was quite interesting to be able to talk to them and sort of hear their point of view, as it were. So, again, by the time I got to Canada, working there, also you get to know the locals a lot better. Which, you know, when you're on holiday, yes, you'll interact with certain, you know, with locals in a certain way. But when you're actually working with people, I think you get a better sense of what that country is about and what the people are like and so on and so on. So it does give you a very different sort of perspective on the countries that you're visiting. And as I said, I think it gives you a greater insight and an understanding.
Absolutely.
Into that country.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Have you got a favourite place that you travelled through?
I have to say, I think Canada is an amazing country from a scenic point of view, definitely. Whether I'd say it's my favourite or not, it's difficult. I mean, Turkey, for example, I really like the Turkish people and I found them very hospitable, very friendly, above and beyond just, you know, you being a tourist and they're trying to sell you carpets or whatever it is. So for different reasons, I like different places. Egypt, again, I found the people incredibly friendly, the locals. But if you're saying, did I have a favourite? I think probably overall, I would say Canada.
Right, yeah. Right. And so did you get that tree planting job in?
I did.
That's
backbreaking
work.
Yeah, it's quite hard work. But again, I was working some extremely remote places up in northern British Columbia, which were not doing that job. I wouldn't have got to see those sort of places and sort of great wilderness with bears running around, all that sort of thing. I know you're from the States, you're perhaps used to bears, but in the Coventry, we don't have too many of them running around.
Oh, fantastic. So how long were you in Canada?
Again, just about a year.
Okay.
It was unfortunate that I got deported, and I do write about it in the book. Basically, just quickly, what happened was a friend came to visit me at the airport and I went up to the airport with a Canadian friend of mine just to pick him up. And he'd been stopped and questioned because he'd previously been to Canada and they were sort of curious as to why he'd visited several times. And then when all the sort of flights had come through, all the passengers had come through, one of the immigration guys came out and said, is anybody here to meet this person? And I sort of said, yes, I am, thinking it will just be a case of confirming who he is. And then before I knew it, I was in the office and they said to me, what is your immigration status? To which I said, I'm a landed immigrant. And before I knew it, he was tapping into the computer and he said, well, I'm not seeing anything on the system here. Anyway, lo and behold, before I knew it, my friend was being allowed into the country and I was in handcuffs, about to be let out of it.
Oh, dear. Dear, I must admit that I've had a couple of encounters with immigration in the past and have been asked to leave once. And I know it's quite a tense sort of experience.
Yes. Well, there were some Americans being deported, so I didn't feel that I was being discriminated against particularly. But I think the sort of hard part for that for me was actually kind of being thrown in jail for a period of time, which was quite, I think, a bit unnecessary. But
wow.
Again, it's all there in the book.
Wow. Well, I look forward to reading it, Andy. We're going to come back in a couple of minutes after another song, and we're going to talk a little bit about your publishing journey, if that's all right.
That's fine.
So, welcome back. And, that was Light My Fire from the Doors, which actually was picked by Andy, who's our guest author today. What made you pick that one, though, Andy?
Okay, so it's actually in the book. When I was in Paris, I visited Jim Morrison's grave.
Right.
He's buried there, along with quite a few famous other people, Edith Piaf, Chopin, lots of writers, famous writers. And I did make the observation in the book that, given that was probably the Doors' greatest hit, that maybe a cremation rather than a burial might have been more appropriate.
Brilliant. I love that.
Fabulous. So, Andy, let's talk a little bit about publishing, because, there are several routes into publishing, and I'm frequently asked by people, by new authors, how to go about getting published. And I know that your books are self-published. So perhaps we can talk a little bit about, the steps of self-publishing and some of the pros and cons of going down that route.
Yeah.
So what first of all would you say are the challenges to for self-publishing?
Well, before I say that, one thing I would say to any aspiring writer is do initially approach an agent or a publishing house. Most don't allow you to directly submit manuscripts, but some do. You do try that first.
I'm doing that at the moment.
Yes.
with my
yeah.
second book, yeah.
If that doesn't sort of come to fruition, if you don't get any sort of anywhere with that, then two main ways that I see it. One, probably the most common one I would say nowadays, is to do it through Amazon. The downside of things, one thing I would say is important that you do try and have your book professionally edited if you can, or at the very least get a friend or an associate or whatever to go through it. Just checking sort of grammar, punctuation, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do stress that because once you've published, if there's mistakes there, then it's kind of hard to undo them. Amazon, probably very easy to publish. They make it extremely easy.
I think maybe too easy for the very reason that you've just mentioned.
Yeah. But the downside of publishing through Amazon is that you are almost restricted to selling your book through Amazon, which you might think they did actually start off as booksellers, Jeff Bezos, ironically. But then it limits you to that platform to sell your book. The other way of doing it, which I did with two of my previous books, is through a company called Ingram Sparks, who are an American company. And you financially, you're probably looking at sort of similar amounts to do it. But the advantage with Ingram Sparks is that not only will they publish on demand, but they'll also put your book in listings in, for example, Waterstones and booksellers. Noble and Barnes is the American one, I think, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Barnes and Noble. Mm-hmm. So personally, although this particular book I did through Amazon, in future, I will sort of go through Ingram Sparks, because your book is then available on a lot more outlets, right, rather than just exclusively through Amazon.
And I think one thing that a lot of new authors don't realize is that if they publish through Amazon, it's very, very difficult to get your books into bookshops at all. I mean, you know, people showing up at their local bookshop with a nice box with Amazon written on the outside, and it immediately, I think, turns a lot of booksellers off.
Well, in fairness to booksellers, independent retailers particularly, people like Amazon are putting them out of business.
Yes.
So you can understand that reluctance to take books that are exclusively done through Amazon. Whereas with Ingram Sparks, you won't get that resistance, because, as I said, it goes through mainstream book sort of sellers and also independents, if you wish to put them.
Yeah. And so would you say that process of going through Amazon and Ingram Sparks, is that, well, you mentioned with Amazon, it is very easy. I mean, are there any issues that people need to be aware of?
One thing I found with Ingram Spark, which is slightly more difficult, doesn't particularly relate to the content of the book, but for the covers, because I didn't really have the software to upload the cover, I had to pay somebody to do that. So there was an additional cost there. But aside from that, I think it's a much better way of doing it.
Okay. I was going to ask about covers, because all of your books have these beautiful illustrated, hand-drawn images on the front. Did you do those?
I didn't actually do the images as such. A friend did those for me. He did charge me for it as well.
Very good, as he should.
But obviously the sort of the idea was mine, and they relate to stories within the book.
I think they're great, because they're nice and colourful and really eye-catching.
Quite vibrant, aren't they?
Like, all three of your books
are great
covers.
I don't know if you've picked up on this, possibly not, because you probably don't know this, but the sky blue background, Coventry City Football Club are called the Sky Blues, so that's quite intentional.
Oh, well, no, I didn't pick up on that, Andy, because I don't follow football whatsoever. Yeah. that, I mean, that's, you know, lovely. I think having that control over book covers is something that probably appeals to quite a lot of people, you know, and that the whole self-publishing thing, it is within the author's control.
Absolutely,
and I suppose that has drawbacks as well, as you know, as we said about the, you know, the editing side of things. Are there any other bits of advice that you would give people that are, you know, just thinking about self-publishing?
Well, just be persistent. As I said, it has never been easier really to self-publish, but that of itself doesn't mean that you shouldn't. But as I said at the beginning, do initially try to get an agent.
Try the traditional route.
Traditional route, which is becoming sort of harder and harder. After a certain period of time, as I said, if that doesn't lead to anything, then definitely go for self-publishing.
Okay, fabulous. Well, Andy, thank you so much for coming in today. It's always really, we have interesting conversations when we get together. So I'm really pleased that you were able to come in and share your latest book with us. So we'll hopefully see you again.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much for coming in, Andy. And just before we hand back over to Patrick, I will say, if you want a copy of Andy's book, Sent from Coventry, pop onto Amazon. And Hanlon is spelled H-A-N-L-O-N. So until next week, keep writing.